Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, it's blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to a special edition of the Chase Down Podcast, previewing the first round series between the Indiana Pacers and the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Justin Rowan with my co-host today, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going?
Going good. Just wrapped up a shift at work. Figured we'd do a little late night pod to get everyone ready for tomorrow's game. And yeah, looking forward to it. It's playoffs time. Can we, instead of our normal intro, can we just bump in with Pitbull's version of Timber?
I don't know if we can throw that in. I wish we could, because that truly is the greatest playoff theme song ever. Because name another year, like not even just this one, like not even for NBA, any playoff.
First
that
off,
had a better one.
You're asking the wrong guy that, because there's of course the famous Fort Minor, 10% luck, 20% skill.
I remember 15, that, but it's not better.
It's not better. And you know what was a sneaky, unironically good one was This Is How a Heart Breaks, Rob Thomas. Worked out really well with all the montages.
I think it, a lot of my drinking has made me forget that moment in time.
For whatever reason, in the playoff theme song has always held a degree of, like, I care about it. I'm always like, I wonder what it's going to be. And it's always a terrible song. It's
let's
like, I don't know if you remember the Black Eyed Peas one. It was terrible.
Before we jump into things that matter, what's your prediction for this year for the song?
I think it's going to be... I can't pick like the song, because oftentimes
it has to be a bad one.
It's always a new song and it's always a bad song for the most part, not including Timber, because that's an American classic. I think we're gonna go back to hip hop. I do. I think we've been in the pop realm for a little too long. I think we're gonna go back to our roots. But if it's not hip-hop, it's Bruno Mars.
Can I just say how funny it is for a podcast with two of the whitest guys I know saying, let's go back to our roots, let's get some hip-hop.
Not my roots.
I know.
The league's just... roots. In fact, the Kendrick Lamar album dropping has really left me in the cold. I don't listen to rap. I don't listen to a ton of music anyway. I feel like a lot of people are music guys. I'm not a music guy.
I'm not a huge music guy.
And like, I am just adrift at sea. I can't keep up. My Twitter is like in a foreign language right now. But I am happy for everyone. I'm not like not one of those people that's like, this isn't a thing I like, so screw you. It's just, I don't
Why
know
do
what to make
do
of
that?
Anything.
Like,
because they're sad.
I saw a lot of that on Twitter today, too, with the Star Wars trailer dropping. And it's like, oh, well, the thing you like is actually terrible. And it's like, oh, come on. Like, you just let it scroll past you on your timeline. You don't have to have a comment on everything.
Yeah, I had this, like, moment of discomfort where I realized, like, well, that's just what I do to, like, really crappy stuff like Nickelback. But I was like, it's fine. It's just Nickelback. You can make fun of it. I, like, had a brief moral crisis before realizing that, screw it, it's funny, so I'm going to be mean.
Well, we're off to a very productive start here.
Yep,
for
really
a
locked
kind of
in.
Quick here series preview. We are we flipped the switch. We're locked in. Hopefully, the Cavs come out with half as much effort and intensity as we have.
I think our energy has been great. I just think it's the focus that's been the problem.
Okay, yeah, we're kind of like a very motivated JR pulling up from half.
Yeah. Like we're working hard. But we also did just space out on defense.
This is true. It's pretty typical for us. So let's start things off, though, talking about some of the X factors in the series. One of the things I mentioned, big X factor for me, is going to be the matchup between Tristan Thompson and Miles Turner. Thompson obviously coming off an injury. Turner, when he's really playing at a ceiling, is a handful because he has tremendous size. He's talented. He's a skilled player. And if Thompson isn't winning that matchup or at least limiting Turner, the Cavs really don't have a plan B to deal with someone of that size.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I wonder how much time Channing Frye is going to play in this series against him. Because when there is a springy shot blocker that likes that, and Miles Turner has obliterated LeBron at the rim a couple times.
Yeah.
He likes to challenge LeBron. He's got the length, the athleticism, and the youthful ignorance to go for it. And that's a dangerous trio. So I wonder how much of the time, I think that they like to do this, especially with slower bigs. I think it's going to be Thompson a lot of time, but I do think a big part of it's going to be Frye.
Do you think Kevin Love's going to see any time there?
Yeah, because it's not like the stuff he does isn't like Kevin Love containable. Like,
right.
He's a pretty good rim runner, but like that's not. I don't think he's like an elite pick and roll player. Not yet. He's an okay pick and pop guy, which, you know, whatever. Like, I guess Tristan's the best equipped for that, but the other bigs, like, there's not a big difference. And then he does love that little post up where he has a. Not, I mean, this will sound like sacrilegious, kind of like Sheed-esque turnaround in the post that looks really nice, leaving his hand, super high release point. But Love has proven himself a pretty capable post defender at this point.
Yeah,
he did a good
job against Drummond last year, who's probably a better pick-and-roll scorer than Miles
but
Turner is.
Yeah, Turner does have a little bit more touch on that jumper.
Yeah, he has offensive skill.
Yeah. You said it, not me.
Is there anything else that like really stands out to you? Because with this series, like we mentioned this before, that the Pacers do have a lot of names, and they on paper look better than they've been all season. But it still feels to me like a straightforward matchup. There isn't a whole lot of things that concern me beyond, okay, the Cavs just have to kind of play hard, play well. And they have an advantage in most areas.
Yeah, I think that, and that's a very good way to put it. Like, they just have an advantage all over the – they have advantages all over the floor. I think an interesting matchup is going to be Thad Young, Kevin Love. I think Thad Young is kind of the guy you kind of forget about on this team.
Right.
Because he's Thad Young, and he's just kind of become a – you know, he's kind of landed everywhere at this point. But I will say – he is the kind of guy who can give the Cavs trouble when they're not focused. Like, he's got those crafty little moves. He, like, operates in this, like, in, like, the empty space at the top of the key. Like just, like, a couple steps in from the free throw line. He's got those little weird push shots. I feel like he's the kind of savvy player that Kevin Love might have a bit of a hard time with.
Mm-hmm. And he's mobile for a big man.
Yeah, he's very mobile and switchy. I'm interested to see how much this... Pacers team decides to switch because in the front line they're really pretty capable. George, Young, and Turner. And Young's not a great defensive player or anything, but he's got, you know, at least the foot speed to move with smaller guys. But on their backcourt, Teague, who can be a real space cadet, and then Monte Ellis, who, while he have it all, he is not a great defender. That's where I wonder if that's – I wonder how much they're going to attack those guards on the defensive end because the front line's actually pretty stout.
Yeah, I think Indiana's going to go with a pretty heavy diet of Lance Stephenson. I think the Monte Ellis experiment really hasn't worked out well for them there. We might see Ellis more with the second unit, and he has been a bit of a Cav killer in the past. He's a guy that – really forces the issue and goes to the rim a lot, which is something that the Cavs hate dealing with in the regular season.
Sure do. If you do anything, they hate dealing with it.
It's true.
Even but if you don't do anything, sometimes they're annoyed.
It's very, very true. But I think especially for defensive reasons, they're going to go with more Lance Stephenson. And it's going to be interesting to see what type of rotations the Cavs use. Because if they have Lance Stephenson out there, I don't necessarily know if he's going to be guarding LeBron the whole time. Paul George certainly has the highest defensive potential on the Pacers, but he hasn't played consistently good defense all year, and they might want to save him for the offensive end of the floor. But if Paul George isn't on LeBron, it'll be interesting to see what type of moves Tyronn Lue uses to try to make George work on the other end of the floor. Is he going to have him chasing Korver around on screens? Is he going to do something similar with JR? It'll be interesting to see, just from a tactical standpoint, what Tyronn Lue decides to do.
Yeah, the Cavs don't really offer you any hiding spots. Not really. Like, I guess, like, if you really wanted to hide him, I guess the guy to hide him on is, like, Channing Frye, maybe? Because it's not like... Channing Frye is a great spot-up guy, but he's not super mobile. Like, he's going to be setting screens, as opposed to, like, Kyle Korver, like, darting around the baseline. But, yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see where they stick him. Honestly, I wonder if... last year in the finals, right, they had LeBron guarding Iggy a lot, and then they finally said, okay, no, Draymond, we're shutting this down, and they put LeBron right on Draymond. I wonder if the Pacers' best gambit here is just to say, Paul, this is going to tire the hell out of you, but you're guarding LeBron, and mm-hmm. sorry, you're just going to have to work really hard.
Because LeBron
can take Lance's lunch money. He can take CJ Miles' lunch money. He can take Thad Young's lunch money. Like, these guys aren't going to be able to stick him nearly as well as Paul. Like, obviously George is going to take the crunch time minutes, but, like, I just wonder if that's something you just need to say. You're going to, like, it's like kind of a David versus Goliath strategy. Like, you need to do something a little high variance, which is exerting your best player maybe a bit beyond what you're comfortable with.
For sure.
Because it's just the smart move. My question for you is, how many guys does Tyronn Lue play regularly in this postseason?
I'd figure about 9 guys. I think you got your starters. You got Richard Jefferson, who's going to play. Amon Shumpert. Tyronn Lue still does seem to have trust with. Kyle Korver is obviously going to be seen significant amount of minutes. God, I guess there is a lot of guys, because then we still haven't even got to Channing Frye and Deron Williams, who
I have 10.
I'd say 10.
Kyrie, JR, LeBron, Love, Thompson. Then on the bench, Deron, Shumpert, Korver, RJ, and Frye. And I think that maybe 10 won't play every game, but I think 10 will be used regularly in these playoffs.
Right. I think they're going to see some serious burn.
Yeah, I think Deron and Shumpert are going to be used situationally.
Yeah.
And I think Frye will be used situationally. Like, I don't think Frye plays more than like 20 minutes against the Warriors.
Right. There's just no need. Like, you're already limited to some extent on what minutes you can maximize Kevin Love. You're not putting Channing Frye in to do a discount version of that role. Like,
yep. You're just going to play Love those minutes.
Yeah. And I think against the Pacers, it's really going to be what rotation the Cavs use is going to be dictated by the front court. Because if Kevin Love can handle Miles Turner, I wouldn't be surprised to see them go with real heavy doses of Love and LeBron as the two bigs there. Because I think LeBron would have absolutely no problem with Thad Young if need be. But to really surround LeBron attacking Paul George if he's guarding him, with shooters everywhere. Like, if you have Kyrie, JR, Korver, LeBron, and Love, that's too much for Indiana to handle. Like, when you look at the defensive personnel, I don't see really what they can do in those situations to bottle up what the Cavs can provide on offense.
Yeah, that's just pretty much death for the Pacers if they do that, because I think the only thing you can really do if you're the Pacers in that situation is shift down with the Cavs. Put Paul right. George at the 4, Turner at the 5, but this team doesn't have a ton of great wings. Like, you're going to have to play Lance and CJ Miles super heavy minutes. And, like, Miles is a known Cavs killer, but the Cavs, that's not a super potent offensive lineup, and the Cavs will still get buckets on them on the other end. So a locked-in Cavs team, like, just presents them with a lot of problems that I don't know if they're going to be able to solve defensively unless Miles Turner and George combine to play out of their freaking minds, which is possible. Like, those guys are great athletes. And George specifically, like, when he's locked in is, I mean, like, not quite Kawhi level defensively, but he's close.
Yeah, and probably a little more talented offensively. Like, I trust Paul George to create a shot for himself in the against playoff defense more than Kawhi Leonard. I don't know if that's necessarily a skill thing or just because I've seen George be asked to do that more frequently, but that's the perception that I carry when it comes to those two.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And George is, I mean, Joe, you can make the case that, like, if you're just accounting for every player at their, like, absolute ceiling of production, like, playing their very best basketball, not just, like, stats, just playing their best basketball, I think you could really make the case that Paul George is a top five level talent in the league. Like,
yeah,
I don't think he is one because of the
BS other top five talent.
Yeah. Yeah, and because of the BS he can fall into sometimes. Like, this regular season, I thought he was really, really disinterested in stretches. Taking, you know, a lot of BS, like, fadeaways and stuff that just, you know, it's not maximizing him. But in a playoff atmosphere, and we saw it last year against Toronto with a team that was probably worse than this one. I don't know if you agree with that, but I think they are.
Yeah,
Even though George Hill is better than Jeff Teague, I think the rest of the team around him wasn't quite there. And he nearly drug Indiana to a series win just based on, I'm so clearly the best player on the floor while sharing the floor with DeRozan and Lowry. Like, it wasn't even close. Like, it was obvious that he was better than them.
Right. And, well, those and two turning into a pumpkin in the playoffs every year doesn't help.
Own discussion. But I just think that it's going to be really interesting to see a mature Paul George play against a mature LeBron in the playoffs, because those battles 2-3 years ago, George was just slightly different. Like, he was becoming a superstar in 2014. Like, I think he probably was one, but that was an ensemble team, I think. The George Hill, Lance, Paul George, David West, Roy Hibbert, like, that was a bit more of an ensemble, even though George was their best player. Like, I think he's a better player than he was then. I think his handle's a lot tighter. I think his shot making has improved.
Yeah, he has a more refined skill set at this point.
Yeah, he's just better because he's older, and that's how that works for the most part. most players that are older, you know, in their prime are better than when they're younger. And it's going to be fun. Like, it's a little scary from the Cavs' perspective, and this would have happened if they were playing the Bulls or the Pacers, but there's a lot of top-end talent on the bottom half of this East bracket. Giannis, Jimmy, and Paul George are all superstars.
Yeah, and it's funny because Jimmy Butler is going to be the best player in this series against the Celtics, which that rarely happens in a 1-8 matchup.
Almost
Giannis
never.
Is going to be the best player in the matchup against Toronto. Maybe some are going to disagree with that, but
yeah, I wonder if someone will yell at us for that. But also,
it's also true.
Come on, it's just a ceiling thing. It's all about ceiling to me. Like,
right,
like
for
Giannis
sure.
at his best is so freaking unbelievable that it's hard to take someone else over him in that series.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Milwaukee creates tons of matchup problems for Toronto, but that's a totally different story. It's kind of funny to me that we're looking at the Cavs roster and trying to figure out exactly how many people are going to be playing in the playoffs. And, like, you really have to kind of whittle it down to 10. I mean, worst case scenario, I don't feel terrible about giving Derek Williams minutes if they're being blown out or whatever. But you got 10 guys that legitimately can help the Cavs and gives them some sort of versatility. And it's funny because most teams, when they head into the playoffs, you kind of think of your 8-man rotation. And with the Cavs having a solid 10-man rotation, it's funny that we still have people complaining that we used the 14th roster spot on Dante Jones.
Yeah. I mean, whoever was there wasn't going to be playing anyway. And what's interesting about the 10-man and really 11, because I'm pretty comfortable with Derek Williams at this point, if he's called upon. I'm not saying I think he's going to be amazing. I just think he's not going to tank you. It's not like playing Mike Miller's corpse 2 years ago.
Like, exactly.
It's just, he's just a different level player. So having 11 guys that you can reliably count on is really interesting, because it just allows Lou to really play chess at a higher level. He can,
yeah, exactly.
He can really pick personnel for what he wants, which is why I don't think 10 or 11 guys are going to play every game unless Lou is really experimenting, which, I mean, he might do in the first couple of rounds, but mm-hmm. I think he'll keep it at least to 9, and either I think one of Darren or one of Shump is going to get very minimal minutes, and one of RJ and one of Fry is going to get very minimal minutes,
right.
Just on a game-by-game basis. So yeah. I think it'll be 9-ish or 10-ish, but they have a lot of options. And if things do go wrong, if, you know, you get a guy in foul trouble, the Cavs aren't as screwed as they used to be.
No, not at all.
Which is really a nice luxury.
And we haven't even got into Eddie Tavares, who is basically a rich fiend. Man's Rudy Gobert.
Rich man's for sure. Rudy Gobert, he watches highlight films of Edie. Just swatting 6 shots in like 20 minutes.
He doesn't even need to go on his tippy toes to dunk.
No, he really doesn't. It's ridiculous. He looked pretty good in those, 24 minutes. He's clearly in game shape, at least, I don't think anyone could say Larry Sanders was, though I'm a little disappointed that they moved on from Sanders, because I think me and you both like a good project.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just
also a fun project. So, like,
yeah, it's an interesting project, too. He's only 24, maybe 25.
Yeah, he's in that range. 24, he's 7'3 with an 8-foot wingspan. Like, I can get behind that.
I like that you tacked on 3 extra inches on his wingspan, but no one needs to know.
Well, no. Like, his Draft Express says 7'9", but Dave McManaman on ESPN in his write-up said that they do believe his wingspan is now 8 feet.
The pituitary glands of these weirdos are... These weird bodied players is crazy. Like Giannis adding 3 inches when he's like 20. Like, what the hell? I stopped growing when I was like 15. Like, isn't that crazy that these guys are still growing? And like,
that's because you like slept on a microwave as it was on.
Yeah. Well, I have I think like 20% of NBA players are just like made in labs and like raised like X-Men style. Like, in, like,
Giannis
captivity.
Giannis had to be.
Yeah, like, I just think, like, these guys can possibly be real. They feel like genetic experiments because their, like, proportions are just so ridiculous. But, Edie looks like a fun project. I wouldn't expect him to play a single meaningful minute, barring if he plays meaningful minutes. Uh-oh. We're in trouble.
Although I could see a Tyronn Lue heat check. Like,
yeah,
Tristan
sure.
needs if a it, bit of a rest. Channing Frye isn't going to cut it against Miles Turner. So let's throw in the giant guy and see what happens.
Yeah, I feel like if they're up 3-0, Edie's getting in there.
Is it Edie or is it Eddie? Because I'm just going with Eddie.
It's almost certainly Eddie. I think there's an ice cream brand called Edie's. Or something like that. And
like
I think
that's a pronunciation I've never heard.
I am 100% conflating the two. It's definitely Eddie. We're not going to go back and fix this in post. And honestly, I might just stick with Edie. Just for me, myself, and I.
Well, I mean, I'm still going with Seti instead of Chetty.
Chetty. Yeah, I've noticed it, and I want you to fix it. And clearly, at this point, you're just not going to.
No. Not until like I hear him say it. And even then, I'm going to be a little upset with it.
Yeah, I mean, we never adjusted on Sergei Karasev, right? Like, I
no,
still
it
called
Karasev.
Him. It was Karasev till the day I die. So, you know what? That's part of, at least on my end, that's part of being an American, is willfully mispronouncing people's names. My father, his name's Alejandro Rodriguez. When he immigrated here from Cuba, they just changed his name to Alex. So,
there
I
you
think.
Go.
I think secondhand, myself and Alex Rodriguez. A-Rod. My dad's A-Rod. but just by secondhand racism towards my dad, mm-hmm. I think I get to mispronounce Eddie Tavares' name.
I like that. I'll go with that. And speaking of genetic freaks, Paul George. Let's circle back to him. Who's going to guard Paul George? Because that's a hassle for LeBron. And that's LeBron's defensive effort and dealing with someone that is aggressive. Like, he prefers a hassle-free style at this point of his career, at least when it's not necessary. So what are the Cavs going to do?
I think they're going to stick JR on him and then Shumpert on him. And then when Richard Jefferson's playing, I think Jefferson will guard him for the most part. And I think it might actually be a smart move, because I don't know if you noticed in the double overtime game, they were running. It was like it was Klay Thompson LeBron was guarding. Like, they were doing pin downs and he was running off like five screens. And LeBron just didn't have the energy, or he didn't want to expend the energy to guard him.
Put the energy into yelling at Tristan, who was not having it.
Yes. So I think that if that's the style they're going to play, it's almost a waste of personnel to put LeBron in that role, because you're just going to exhaust him. That's a really taxing style of defense. When I think JR or RJ could do, a decent job, like a 75% approximation of what LeBron would do. LeBron's value, I think, as a defender lies in his ability to play free safety.
Exactly.
And, like, it's almost kind of wasteful to have him sprinting around nine screens trying to, like, tail Paul George. Like, it sounds like you're just making excuses for him, but I promise I'm not. LeBron just tweeted, Zero Dark 30, 23, activated.
Oh, great. Here we go.
We're back.
Maybe I should do the same and spare people from my terrible tweets.
Yeah, I said that at work, that I told my boss that in solidarity I wasn't going to use Twitter. And he goes, I've been trying to stop you from tweeting at work for 3 years. And LeBron James is going to be the one to stop you. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to stop tweeting. LeBron tweeted out a picture of himself with that tweet using
Batman one?
No, it's actually really cool. It's from the HP Basketball Quarterly, the Hardwood Paroxysm Quarterly. Piece of art from that is what he tweeted out with his Zero Dark 30. So shout out to Matt Moore and the boys.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. Matt Moore. I don't think he was the editor. I'll bet it was Ian Levy still. But regardless, super cool. And I guess LeBron's not going to tweet for a while. And maybe he'll unfollow the Cavs just to freak everyone out for a minute after a loss.
But before we wrap this up, I want to circle back to LeBron's Batman photo he tweeted last year. Was that something that we know who made it? Like, was that used for something? Or did he, like, call someone up being like, hey, I got an idea for a Photoshop? Or did he make it himself? I have so many questions.
I think the logistics of what these NBA weirdos do is my favorite part of all of it. Like, the Halloween party, LeBron had to call the caterer and say, excuse me, Sally, can we please get tombstones on the cookies with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson on it? For the drum set that no one's going to play, because it's a party, why we have a drum set.
Right.
Can we put 3-1? Can we get a decal? Can we print out a decal of 3-1 lead? And then the Warriors, for their part, we need an enormous S-U-P-E-R. We're spelling supervillains with
balloons. And we need a drone to capture it.
Yeah. Excuse me, sir, is this a children's birthday party? Like a superhero theme? We got a lot of superhero kind of cakes. No, it's a party for a bunch of dudes in their 30s.
And then we're going to complain about the attention that's on us.
Yeah, so like the logistics of all of this is my favorite. So the idea of LeBron commissioning an independent contractor to illustrate him in a Batman suit is just the funniest thing. And you know who you really have to feel for in this situation is his assistant. Because his assistant is making ridiculous calls. It's like in The Office when Phyllis has commandeered the party planning committee.
Right.
And Michael wants an anti-gravity machine for a party, and Phyllis is calling, like, combing through the yellow pages, trying to find an anti-gravity machine. Phyllis is the equivalent of his assistant. Just ridiculous requests that she just has to follow through.
It would be really great if it was LeBron firing up Photoshop. Like, I like, maybe that's his only relatable thing to my life, is sitting there being like, hey, you know what would be funny? Let's put me, cartoon me, here with the Batman mask. Just to show everybody how serious I am.
Hey, you have a lot more in common with LeBron than you think. Both of you are unbelievably petty.
It's true.
So, you know, take to heart with that. Like, that's your common ground. If you ever meet him, like, you know, just around, I think that's what you lead with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hold grudges over weird things, too.
Yeah, I missed my opportunity, I guess, when I was in the locker room with LeBron. I'm like, hey, I really should have brought it up. I'm like, hey, you're petty, I'm petty.
You want to get ice cream?
Everything comes down to ice cream. It brings all of life together.
Always and forever.
And that's probably a good point to bring this podcast all together. As I said, this is a special edition of the podcast. We're going to have a few more frequently throughout the playoffs. Talking about playoffs. Whatever key things are going on. As I wrap this up, just if you could help me out, Carter, and just say playoffs randomly after every
playoffs
sentence, that'd be appreciated. So playoffs. Again, this is the Chase Down Podcast, part of All Money Baller Radio, which is now starting to be launched on Dash Radio as well. We're pretty excited about that.
Playoffs.
So you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You playoffs. Can follow us both on Twitter. We tweet out the podcast a lot. So thanks to all our listeners. And as always, go Cavs.
Playoffs.